Tabletopped will start after the following messages.
What if music was magic? Against the Gloom is a fantasy TTRPG about punk pirate troubadours fighting back against a bleak world, one gig at a time. From Scripted Games, the studio that brought you Psychic Trash Detectives, comes a new game by Dustin Patrick Winter. Against the Gloom is about harnessing the power of music, finding chosen family, and building community in the face of the void. Find it now on Kickstarter. Rock on.
Welcome back to Tabletop, everyone. This is, in our tabletop history, the year of tabletop, or the week of tabletop's birth. This is second anniversary of tabletop.
Oh,
this
two?
Week. Yeah.
We're officially a toddler? Podcast?
Terrible twos, baby.
That is too long.
Like, this should have been like a 3-month project.
Yeah, we should have, yeah.
So today we wanted to go through and answer a bunch of reader questions. You all sent in so many great ones. We're going to try to get through as many as we can.
They all sent in a question? All of our listeners?
All 11 of them.
Great.
But we might not be able to get to all of them, so we might split this into two episodes. We'll see what happens. We also have a special interview coming up on Wednesday, which is sort of our tradition of some random person in the group interviewing me. Yeah, last year was Shade. This year it's Franco. Next year, Rio's got the hot mic.
Can't wait.
So we'll see how that goes.
I'm going to start preparing now.
Yeah, you should.
I'm going to ask you the hard-hitting questions. Ah, God, I hope you have a tax evasion scandal in the next year.
You know what?
Would you do something terrible this year for me?
I could do that for you, Rio.
Thanks, bud.
Nick, I'm a little confused, actually. Yeah. What is the timeline? What is today?
What is today?
According to... You know, like, is it actually going to come out this week?
So we are recording this on February 11th, but it's going to come out not tomorrow, the next day.
Okay, I was a little worried. I was like, I don't know if this is how it works, Nick.
You're like, the time
doesn't work here.
Time is a flat circle. And speaking of time being a flat circle, let's answer a question from Greg. Greg asks...
Did he consent to have his name read?
Yes.
Okay.
I have noticed that in recent years, RPGs like D&D have become increasingly popular, almost to the point of becoming mainstream. I'm curious as to why. I'm going to start this whole process over because we didn't introduce ourselves.
Oh my God.
Nor did we tell anyone that Shade is not going to be here.
Oh, it's me. It's me, Franco.
It's your boy, Rio.
It's Nick, your host. Shade is not here because he is
in prison.
Delinquent. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He was delinquent on his taxes, and that is why he is in prison.
Oh, tax relevant. Go. Yeah, it is tax season, baby.
All right, let's get into some questions. Here we go. Greg asks, I have noticed that in recent years, RPGs like D&D have become increasingly popular, almost to the point of becoming mainstream. I'm curious as to why this is happening now, and I would love to have your opinion on it. All right, guys. You guys are culture setters. Why is RPGs,
thing that you're going to commit
to? Setters? Yeah,
culture setters?
Yeah, I'm committing to it.
Okay.
Actual plays being run by popular actors.
Yeah.
I would have to definitely say the Matt Mercer effect.
Yeah.
Geek and Sundry, Adventure Zone, all of those plays really make people like, oh, I want to play this game.
And College humor people. Cool
kids. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it is interesting.
Also, the advent of the podcast as a medium in which anyone could just hop on and do it.
Like us.
Live plays were like automatic stuff. It's like, hey, we're just going to play D&D and record it.
Yeah,
and then I think
we're just going to record this and it'll be fine and we're not going to edit this at all and blah, blah, blah. I'm kidding. A lot of people put a lot of work into actual plays and they sound so hard.
in a way, it kind of does feel
that's
like...
That's why we don't do that one. That's why we don't do actual plays.
Yeah, it actually takes work.
It sounds really hard.
Yeah. Well, one of our guests in the last year was taught like studies TTRPGs and was kind of saying this as well of like, this is that we are witnessing the birth of a new medium, like a new storytelling medium. In that, you know, this has been sort of, to your point that you've said a lot, Franco, that this is sort of folklore tradition, but this specific
folk
way,
tradition.
Folk tradition, not folklore traditions.
But it does involve folklore.
Yeah. but the like the idea that anybody, to your point, Rio, can sit down and use this sort of framework to create a piece of fiction is sort of like a new way of people creating fiction to be consumed in a mainstream or capitalist way. And so like it is interesting. We're kind of seeing the birth of this. It's sort of like in the early 2000s when everyone was making a craft brewery.
Oh my God, yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
We are kind of seeing that with, you know, TTRPGs in a way. Like everyone is, there's so many of them now. There always have been a bunch, but like we are seeing the market just being flooded with custom ones, and also same with actual plays.
Also, just it's a good time in society for escapism.
Yeah, I that's
think.
True.
A lot of people are looking to branch out. Yeah.
But yeah, I think, shoot, what was the thing that you were saying? You were saying something
about craft breweries? Just like sort of the flooding of the market?
Yeah.
Or is it the new way of telling?
I think what's interesting about like the sort of actual play space too is that so much of it is focused on Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition.
Yeah.
But there are some really great, like, the one-shot podcast does, like, one-shots of different systems and stuff. And
so
I think that
does our friend Game Master Monday. Go check out his podcast.
Yeah. I think, like, I think there are a lot more, like, rich avenues for creating sort of, like, actual play.
Yeah.
What is it? Like things, you know, like
because look at Dimension 20. They use different rule sets all the time and modify things, and it's really like because you just if the story is important, the system's not so much. But
yeah,
it does feel like there is sort of a. It's interesting too because there is sort of a golden age of board games happening, or you know, people
started
are,
like a like. 10 or 12 years ago or something
exactly. Yeah. And I think that they kind of came up at the same time as well. And something that you both were saying was like how 5e is such a core part of the actual play community.
It's a really common vernacular that anybody can glom onto. And I think that's mostly why it's being used.
It's like,
more
you know,
than others.
It's the reason why pop music is like so popular is that anyone can kind of listen to it and be like, I understand the framework. Like, I understand this sort of...
Like, this isn't challenging.
Actually, here's because your brain loves patterns, and pop music uses a lot of the same chords, so your brain knows what's happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it just likes to listen to that kind of music. It's like...
And I know, think it's the, I know what to feel when to feel it.
Yeah. And I think that is also kind of exactly what 5e is, because it's like... When someone rolls a nat 20, everyone at the table screams, like every, you know, actual play does that. And that's because the 20 means a certain thing to your brain. And so it's like a shared vernacular that you're.
Yeah. That is really interesting, actually. Yeah. Because it's like, because like you kind of have to know that language. God, it makes me think, I don't know. I'm just like, it feels so like, theoretical now. Yeah. I feel like we're like going into like theory and like semiotics or something.
Yeah, totally.
Like you're like, oh, what's the significant? Like this is significant to us because we all have like this shared knowledge of it.
Yeah. Also, Shade from prison did send me a couple notes, and one of the points that he made was that the internet being a huge part of this too. That this is sort of like an internet age medium in that like. A lot of these games are streamed on Twitch and podcasts, like you were saying, Rio. And a lot of those people, they need like content. And this is a way to make content very quickly. Yeah. Like writing a fiction chapter or whatever, it can take, you know, months, years, whatever.
Writing a book is very really hard. It takes so long time.
Yeah. And a lot of these people have to stream daily they're always doing something. And that means that maybe once a week they can slot in a TTRPG for 3 hours and that hits like a certain.
I mean, they can also just like leave a video on playing in the background and then walk away from it. Yeah. Which is easier. I think they should just keep doing that. I think I like to watch YouTube through a different person. Yeah.
Twitch.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand Twitch. I don't understand why people watch it.
I think it's the same thing. Like, I think it is the Gen Z version of podcasts in that it allows you to build a parasocial relationship with folks and like really feel like you're part of a community, which is great. And I think that podcasts are not like we came up in the time of like iPod, and listening is what we did, you know? And now the next generation is coming up in the age of like Instagram and, you know, video, short form video being the thing. And so, and YouTube is huge. And so like they want to interact with their influencers and culture setters via video, which I think Twitch is, you know what I mean?
That's weird.
I don't want to be perceived that way.
I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Deep thought.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg. Thanks for the question. We love you and hope that you listen forever. All right, here we go. Nathan from, hey, this is actually a great segue. Nathan from the wonderful Actual Play podcast, AARPGs, asked that his question is more of a discussion starter, and he's not expecting a clear answer.
Aren't all questions?
He knows us.
I mean, yeah, I don't.
We're not, you know, the most concise. He says, with the size of the TTRPG market, do you think that there is a path to someone or for someone to turn making actual play podcasts into their day job? I ask this as someone who is highly cynical and skeptical by nature and has no plan to monetize their own actual play.
I say no. Gut feeling. The actual plays that are going to make money are already out there. Damn. And I feel like it would be really hard to branch into that and to try to – because how are you going to do what they're doing new and differently? You need a great idea.
You
need a weird angle to come in at the door. And it's like also like how's being like a popular movie star or making music. Like, yeah, you could. There's that chance. But the odds are very slight.
That is very cynical.
That's
exceedingly cynical.
I will say this, is that if you are trying to like get big or monetize something by being like the first there, if you hear about it, it's already too late. Like you've already missed that train. You have to sort of be the person to be like, I'm going to do this thing that I don't see anywhere. So to that point, Rio, I think that you're right. To the rest of it, I think that it's just you – it becomes – it switches from being, I'm going to make this cool, unique thing with my friends, and it's going to be rewarded with money. That is something that only like the first like three people in a space can do. And then I think after that, it is a business, and you have to treat it as such. And that becomes way harder to do, especially when you look at just like the person power and actual play requires. It's like, let's say you have four players and a GM. That's five people you have to pay if you're actually turning into a day job. That's a small business. That's like you have to
Too many players.
Let's say you have three people and a GM then. That's four people. That's still a small business. That's like how many people run, you know, a comic book shop or whatever. And they have products that they're selling constantly. Like you have to think about your margins. You have to think about where your revenue sources are coming from, especially in an ad market. What they are looking for is wide reach usually. And you're being paid like less than a cent per listen on an ad. So it's like, there's not, you have to be way more creative. Like you have to do something like Greetings Adventures, and they were one of the first where they do like live shows. They have a dedicated community that will pay for those things to be in a space with them. They have made like a convention. They've done all these other things. So they
diversify
your assets.
Is a good answer. Diversify is a good answer.
Yeah. Like if you are trying to make money by making an actual play, I don't know if you can, but if you're trying to make money with the actual play being part of the product that you are selling, then maybe there's a way, you know?
Yeah. Like my brother and me is just like Adventure Zone is just like a spinoff, you know, a lot of, and
they have like 11 podcasts. Yeah. The McElroy Dynasty.
There's another podcast I listen to, Sitcom D&D, and the only reason that I was listening to it was because one of the hosts from another podcast I really like is on it, you know. And then actually the only reason I listened to that podcast was because it was talked about on My Brother and Me.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. And also the thing that kind of comes out of this too is that you are building a personal brand, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that you can, like, if you're trying to make this your day job, you can be part of an actual play podcast, and then everyone's like, oh man, I love this character. And then you turn that into a personal brand where you go on other podcasts, maybe you release your own merch or whatever. Maybe that's a way you can become, you know, monetized. But it is not a fun, artistic, cool way to do it. It's like you have to be pretty, you know, ruthless and capitalist about it.
Let me give you, okay. Do I think you can do it? No. I still believe all the stuff that I believe. But do you want to know how I think you could do it? is
no.
Yeah,
no.
to that, you do have to like come up with what is your brand going to be? Why is your actual play unique, special? What makes it great?
Yeah.
It has Joe Manganiello on it.
You need to network with other actual plays. You need to be cross promoting, reaching out, getting people to come play in your actual play as like guest PCs, and then appearing on other actual plays to just sort of like, you need to get your name out there. And again, like we were saying, diversify. Your actual play needs to have some kind of merch. You need to be like doing some kind of special shows.
I say modules or whatever, you know.
You know, there's the RuPaul method. RuPaul has Drag Race, but RuPaul also has a podcast.
Paying any of the people on Drag Race.
RuPaul, I don't know, but I'm like, but RuPaul has podcasts where she talks about her other shows. Her shows like
has a streaming network.
You have to find a way to promote.
You have to start a streaming network.
Diversify, set a brand. Well, stick to that brand.
This is the thing that I was like, because you know. With just running Tabletopped, I was like, okay, well, if I was ever to actually make money on this, the way to do it would be to make a network of like 10 to 20 different podcasts that are all, you know, having their thing cross promoting, and then you bring it together. You have merch that's like centralized in a way where you then distribute funds. Would that be enough for any single one of those people to have enough to be a day job? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it'd be enough to like put more marketing money behind whatever you're doing. Anyway, hopefully that answers some of your questions.
Remember, don't capitalize your hobbies. Find, you have to have creative escapes. Not everything can be about being productive.
Yeah.
It's a soul crushing world out there. Don't
oh my God.
Don't let it into your heart.
All right. Jeezy, why don't crazy. We let's oh, move wait, right
I
along.
Have a, I have another thing to say. Yeah. It was about maybe we can do an actual play, but I'm just going to run Karen, but pretend that we're doing 5e.
I love it.
That would be funny, huh?
So good. Where it's like the thing
make
is
a saving throw.
Yeah,
I won't
like,
tell you what kind.
At the end of each episode.
Well, I guess a strength saving throw is still a strength saving throw.
At the end of each episode, all the players have to guess what game that they're playing.
Oh my God. That's so stupid, but I love it. Yeah. Let's do that.
All right.
Oh,
oh, this is great. So this is from Scripted Games, which is a great indie publisher. Go check their stuff out. They actually have a Kickstarter going right now for Against the Gloom. You've probably heard the interview last week. They're wonderful. I really love them. And here's their question. What is the coolest game you have never played?
Oh.
Yeah. As game designers, we at Scripted Games are excited to make games that GMs and other players are excited to play. So what are the game premises, mechanics, or other gaming experiences you wish existed but don't?
Okay, I'm glad that question is more broad.
Yeah.
Because like, I was thinking about like, mechanically.
I haven't played them. How would I know if they're the coolest game
like,
I've ever
played?
Like
if you've read some of it or something like that.
Yeah, or
like Ultraviolet Grasslands. Yeah. Like you were like, oh, that looks really cool. I'm going to buy it because I saw it in Franco's house.
So yeah, like what's the thing that like grabs you, shakes you and says, play this game kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Usually my ex-husband. Haha, I'm kidding. You know what I would love? A Wacky Racers game.
A Wacky Racers game?
Yeah.
You
remember Wacky Racers from the 70s?
Yeah, we came up...
We were talking about it
in a long car ride one
time. Yeah.
With Steven, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of like adventure games out there.
Of the show.
But we were talking about this earlier. Like, there's not a lot of... you know, a lot of animes have really good like sports animes. Like, they just play soccer or swim team.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of sports RPGs out there.
I mean, there are some out there, right? It's just
I don't know any of them. I haven't caught
your attention. So
the coolest ones I haven't played yet.
Oh, well, there you go. For me, I think that
a basketball one would be really cool. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, yeah, roll the slam dunk. And then it's like, oh, fuck yeah.
You shatter the backboard. Yeah. The ref high fives you.
That's what your 20s gets you in that game.
Yeah.
Slam dunk.
For me, let's see. I really like resonate with genre more than anything else. Like I find games that I'm just like, oh, that sounds so cool. And then the second thing that comes into it is the mechanic. I really love if there's a strong mechanic. Like Locus is an interesting horror game that I really want to play. That when you make a character, you make a character based on their flaws rather than their strengths.
That makes me think there's a Nate Treme game that is like that. I forget what it's called. I think it's called Rotor.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like your stats are like weak and stuff like that. Like where it's like these are all your defects.
Yeah.
And have you ever played the original like Borderlands game?
Yeah.
There's a character called Scooter. He's a great mechanic in that game.
Oh my god. Sorry, Nick. We both interrupted you, and mine was a legit one.
Yeah.
So
no.
You
I can appreciate
apologize.
You,
no, mine.
Franco.
I was talking about games that had a good mechanic.
Get the fuck out.
Right. He was a great mechanic.
Listen. B minus, C minus, no more.
Oh, man.
All right. So I also think, though, that there's like stuff. I don't know about you guys,
just
but.
Passing.
Sorry?
No.
C's get degrees.
There's things like in Morkborg, the.
Oh, my God. I want to play Morkborg so bad.
Well, okay. Well, hold on to that thought. Hold on to it. Don't forget. Okay. So Morkborg has a. Prophecy system that I just think is like so fucking cool. Mm-hmm. Like it has a mechanic that is like a timer basically for the game that you can decide on how to play with your characters, and that just fucking rules. It has like a really strong aesthetic, so that's another one that really draws me in. And you know, I think that there's just like that's the thing that really gets me is if there's like a really strong mechanic that feels like a story driver or a really strong setting for me that I'm like, okay, I want to play this. But Rio, you were saying you really wanted to play Morkborg, but you've never played it. And I would say probably you've never read anything of it. Is that true?
Not in depth, no.
Yeah. So what is it that catches your eye?
The word Morkborg.
I think it's Morkborg.
That's what attached it to me originally.
Uh-huh.
But then they have like a cyborg and a pirate borg. Yeah. And it's like, oh, so it also like I really want to get involved because they seem to have like a lot of genres within its own rule system.
Yeah.
Which I felt really cool. And also I think it's supposed to be like a really I don't want to say grimdark, but
it's crazy grimdark.
It's crazy grimdark. And I was like,
it's a metal album.
I don't like usually go for that sort of thing, but there's just something about the artwork and the font choices, the creative presentations of the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
has really drawn
book.
Me in.
It is a beautiful.
And then
book.
I don't, and I guess like you know, because my aesthetic has always been very cute with dark undertones, Happy Tree Friends, Adventures in Coronor that also have stab your friend through the body for keys.
I don't think that's cute.
No, but you know, there's also Tina, who's like this fun little woodland. Gotcha. You know, so it's like I like a good mix.
Yeah.
Of high cute, grimdark, and I think I could really make Morkborg work for me there.
Cool.
There is a specific mechanic that I think is really fascinating. It's called push. It's an SRD. And it's, I think it's like you roll 1d6 and I think it's like 1, 2, and 3, it's a mixed success on a 4, 5, and 6, or maybe it's just a 5 and 6. It's a success. But you can roll, another d6 if you want to make the mixed success a full success.
Mm-hmm.
And so you roll another d6, but on a 7+, it's a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And cool. So it's like really like,
That's why
it's push your luck. Yeah. So like, I think that's a really fun mechanic. I was reading the rest of the SRD and I don't think the rest of it really jumped out at me. I think it was a little maybe more complex as far as like building the world and as far as playing, because it's kind of a GM-less thing.
Yeah.
But it's also an SRD that is meant to be hacked up. So,
yeah,
you know, you could just put in a push your luck mechanic into any of your games.
Yeah. I suggest you do. It's always so fun because the players have no one to blame but themselves.
Yeah. And I'm running through like the stats right now. Like if I rolled a 3, like I have a 50% chance of not fucking it up.
And the mixed success is supposed to be like a pretty dire cost. Like you shouldn't be rolling unless there's like an actual consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Like in all games. But yeah, when you roll that mixed success, it should be like, yeah, like you got the thing that you wanted, but you paid a pretty dear price.
Yeah.
Or do you want to push your luck?
Yeah. Yeah, so good. One thing also that I think just came to me as we were talking is something that is becoming more and more of a thing in my brain when I think about expanding my gaze out to other indie TTRPGs is...
Where are you sending me?
I knew you were going to say something.
That's a B. You got a B on that one. That was decent.
There was my ex-roommate was an architecture student, and there's like something with like how you're designing like the images or whatever, and he's like, yeah, you have to control the gaze, and you're like, what?
So here we go. What I was saying was that when I think about kind of getting people to play new games is ease of learning. That is something that is huge to me because I'm not good at explaining anything to anyone.
I'm not good at understanding.
Yeah. So like if you can make a system that feels really compelling and the mechanics feel really interesting, but there's not too many of them, it feels great.
How the fuck did any of us learn 5e?
I know.
I think it's because it's all we had. We didn't know about these other games.
I guess it kind of was, yeah.
And
I
mean, we could all focus our energies.
My friend introduced me to third edition and that was D&D and that's just what I knew.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like new things, so I don't really branch out that much.
I mean, when I played Pathfinder, they were kind of like, yeah, this is all your stuff, and then you'll just roll whenever you need to, so don't worry about it. I was like, okay. And then it was fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, with 5e, I was very resistant to learning all the rules because there were so many of them. Yeah. But now I'm like a fucking walking encyclopedia, ironically.
Yeah. The way I think about it is, like, how long does it take someone to understand how to think about playing the game?
Yeah.
Not even all the mechanics, but just like how should they be thinking while playing the game? And if you can get there quickly, great game. If it takes like multiple read throughs, like right now I'm trying to teach myself Warhammer 40K and I'm a dummy. So whenever I read through it, I'm like, I don't understand anything. I have to do this again. That's really frustrating. I hate that experience.
Yeah. I feel that way when I learn board games too.
Yeah. That's really true on board games.
The first time you play a board game, it's like so confusing.
Yeah.
It's like, what am I doing? Oh, man. I learned Agricola. Have you ever played Agricola?
Mm-mm. It's a good one.
It's good. And then, but like I played with my friend Aaron a lot. Like he was the one that introduced me to like the new board game renaissance and stuff. And I just remember like, it was also like the beginning of grad school. And it was like the first time I had met him and we went to this board game shop and he spent $70 on a board game. And I was like, what?
It's a good standard. Game.
What is that? But yeah, like, right. Yeah. That's not really that outlandish to me now. But like back then I was like, huh? Yeah. A board game? Like
$20 for Candyland. What are you talking about?
It's like, nah, dude, this is Agricola.
Yeah.
This game is hard to understand. And I'm going to beat you every time.
I've had that. There's literally a game called Netrunner that Mac showed. It was my first sort of play.
I played that one, yeah.
If you don't understand everything about your deck while you play, you are going to be beaten 100% of the time.
That's wild.
It's whoever understands the game better wins. And so, like, I just got thrashed, like, 5 times in a row. And I was like, great game. I never want to play this again.
It's the opposite of poker.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's keep going. Lex asks, is there a TTRPG you'd recommend other than D&D 5e? What a great question. We can talk about this forever. I see D&D 5e everywhere, but I want to try some other TTRPGs. Also, when it comes to writing a story for a game, are there any steadfast rules I should follow to make sure that the story comes out quote-unquote right? Or do you have any recommendations on structuring a story so it all makes sense?
Ooh, especially, I have so many things about this.
Yeah. Lex, you have asked too many questions.
Especially once the players inevitably add their chaotic flair to the story.
Uh-oh.
All right, so let's start first with recommendations that are non-D&D.
All right, Monster of the Week, Powered by the Apocalypse.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, he got him. He got him.
You took away my go-to. Shit. What about you, Franco?
What are you going to do? What are you going to do now?
Karen. Karen 2E is also coming out. The playtest stuff is available and it's released for free. It's a great game. It's a really easy way to go from like a like high fantasy, high crunch like 5e thing to like, oh, this is still high fantasy.
Yeah.
But it's like, or it can be high fantasy. But yeah, because Into the Odd is the sort of the basis of Karen, but I think Karen is more easily accessible just because it's more specifically like more like a fantasy milieu, and it's also like the rules are completely free and they're all available, and Into the Odd is also free, like there's like a SRD and stuff, but the Karen website is very good.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And also talking about Karen, if you are somebody who really likes having a physical copy, you can buy one for like $5.
Yeah.
It's printed, amazing.
It's printed at cost. Yeah.
I gonna just add on a little bit Rio to Monster of the Week. That is my favorite low crunch game. It's just I feel like I can teach Monster of the Week to pretty much anybody in 30 minutes.
Just the standard list of moves, and then your particular class moves, your book moves.
Yeah.
And it's all just a 2d6 system. It's very easy to pick up.
I really love it. Yeah. So, but it's taken away from me, so I can't use it.
Yeah. Nice work, actually. I like that you did that.
One thing that I will say is so Fern Milton from Cobblepath Games, who is a great developer, go check their stuff out. So she said that she's super sick of people trying to take their story and shove it into the hole of like whatever system they know best. So instead of trying to like take a square peg and put it in a round hole, maybe you should try to find the system that is perfect for your story you're trying to say. And I think that that's great. That's like a really good way of doing it if you have a group that's willing to
story. I don't like it.
Frank is about to jump across the table. But I really, why don't I change story to experience?
Okay.
Is that better?
Yeah.
So like trying to match the TTRPG with the experience you're looking to have. Like I said, I'm really down with like low learning, like easy to pick
I
up
hate
and play.
Learning.
And there are a ton of really great one page TTRPGs out there that I would love to like just sit down and play with people. Like Stacks of Goblins is great, where it's a one pager and there are three people who can play, and then there's the GM essentially, and there's the top goblin, the middle goblin, and the ground goblin, and you're trying to go out for the Goblin King and steal all these things because the Goblin King wants weird shit. But like each of you in the stack has a different like level of power over what you're doing. So like the ground goblin gets to decide where you walk and like where you go, and you're all kind of in competition with each other because you want to bring the thing back to the Goblin King. And so there's like a really fun sort of, it's not like PvP, but it's just sort of like chaos. It's very, very fun. So I definitely,
it's a group project.
Exactly. It's a group project. Very, very fun. Coffee and Chaos is like that as well. Where it's like a very unique system, easy to pick up and play, and it allows you to bring characters in from anything you've ever played into it and just run a coffee shop, which is fun. And so I really like those kind of one-off experiences that are unique and interesting and memorable, rather than picking, you know, like 5e to run something because you just know that it can last a year. I'm not into perpetual games. I like end dates sort of thing, or like a ending in sight. And so I would also suggest anything that allows
you to... Well, I haven't even started yet and you're already ready to just get off the boat. Wow, I've heard of short attention spans.
Yeah.
Like, don't even start the game unless it's almost over.
I mean, fair enough. But I also like... I've just never been into comics, you know, where it's just these are going to go on forever, you know, and that's just not my jam. So I like stuff that has an ending, so it has an arc. That's why I like movies. It's why I like plays. It's, you know, it's my own illness. So that's what I'd say. Check out some of the one pagers, and you can even just grab a bunch of them and then kind of cobble them together into like a campaign if you wanted to. I really like the idea of not being bound to a single system.
You're a bear stealing honey, but then you turn into a goblin and you get stacked up in a
Exactly. Yeah. It's like the casino catches you and turns you into three goblins, and the Goblin King is like, I'll turn you back, but you gotta go get me some shit.
That's fun.
That's a fun little narrative hook to keep it going.
And I think that's really fun, especially if you like, I really love in-person games. So if you're in person and can like look at a thing together before you play, it's always great to have these quick.
I like looking
rules.
At your eyes before we play.
I know,
a game.
Right? It's so good.
We'll get that connection.
The fear, you know, when you're a GM and you can see the fear around you, it's great. So
yeah, it's really hard to get that sort of the pheromones. Of failure that your players give off when you're about to destroy them.
Yeah,
earlier, I mean, when you're not when the game of the lore is going to you,
Frodian
the DM, are
Frodian slip.
Oh, this is Frodo. Frodian slip.
Oh, he's in the volcano. He's in a Frodian slip.
Terrible. That made me think of earlier this week, we played a game where Shade was running it, and the absolute giddiness of his, like, of him running a vampire and running like a carriage monster and stuff, and he was like, yeah, he's like, oh god,
man, remember when somebody punched a horse into the carriage monster?
Oh yeah. Oh shit, I forgot that happened.
Oh
yeah,
so good.
It's so good.
It's just fun to be together. One thing we shouldn't miss, the second part of their question about story structure.
Yeah, could you repeat it?
Yeah, of course. When it comes to writing a story for a game, are there any Are there any steadfast rules I should follow or
do
make
not
sure the
write
story?
A story.
You're not writing don't a story. Write a story.
You're not writing a story.
I think this is what Franco's about to get to. But if you're writing an adventure for your players to play in, you need to write character motivations, plans of action.
For the NPCs, right? Okay, thank you.
And you need what event is going to happen that the PCs have no power over. Like, is there going to be an avalanche or a storm? Do not write the middle or end. You only want the beginnings.
You just want the situation.
Yes.
I almost agree with everything you said.
Okay, but think about Lakewood.
Yeah.
When you ran Lakewood, you did not write that story.
No, I had the end, though.
Yeah, but you knew the end wasn't like Shay, Jackie, and Franco save the world.
No,
the end was Moldoth, his powers like invade the world or whatever. Exactly. That's Midnight.
Yeah.
That's a situation.
This is a thing that I think that we always like we've learned a shared language where we can agree on this, which is like,
that is not a story.
Yeah. Do not write the story, write what will happen if the characters don't intercede. Yeah. I always recommend if you're trying to make some sort of like cohesive thing that like there's a bigger season arc or whatever, have what the big thing that is happening in the background that maybe they don't even understand yet, like write what in your mind, have an understanding of the pathway that that's following, and then just keep updating it every time your players fuck it up so that it's like, oh, that thing that Moldoth was trying to do didn't happen because the players interceded and stopped that thing from happening.
So they're going to try something else.
Yeah, exactly. So that is, I think, a really good structure of like how to write a story for a TTRPG what is it that you're trying to have happen in the world, and then just keep that in the back of your mind so that when the players come in and like screw with it and have their chaotic flair, as you say, then how is that going to happen? Because also players could do something where they just do not at all interfere with that overarching thing that you have in the background. So let it happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Have the world like crack in two, or like the night never ends because whatever they decided to ignore.
Yeah, because they were saving a goose.
Yeah. And then it's like, then that is also part of the campaign and part of
the story. That's part of the story.
Yeah. The story is we chose this goose's life over the entire continent.
Like, over the sun.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, okay, well, is that important to them anymore? Like, do they even care that the sun is blotted out? If not, then that is also like, it's an interesting story to see how these like chaotic weirdos live in a new.
To drink a lot of milk.
Have like a new sort of world that they're experiencing. And that can be the story. Yeah. But I think that in my mind, I agree. Never have a firm thing of like what you want, this is going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And try to force it.
And I don't want to put words in the question asker's mouth about this. Like, maybe that is also what they meant.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But there is a YouTube video that I saw, and I feel very bad because I do not remember who the person was. They're getting very popular on YouTube, though, so I think they'll be fine.
Yeah.
But basically, he said that the worst thing that the DMG, the 5e DMG did was list one of the roles of the Dungeon Master as a storyteller.
Yeah.
So you're not a storyteller. Mm-hmm. You're a facilitator, you're a referee, you're a planner, you're like doing all this other stuff. Like, you're not a storyteller.
More instigator than storyteller.
You're setting things up, but you're not a storyteller. It's not your responsibility to tell the story for them. Like, it's so much pressure.
Yeah, and this
I think that
thing
causes a lot of table conflict when the DM's trying to tell a story and the players aren't playing it correctly.
Yeah, that's where like fudging comes in and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of.
And here, well, I don't mind a fudge when you're fudging for an experience rather than like a specific story or whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah, but
this is a fudge that you have admitted to doing. So
I'm saying my opinions have changed over time.
Totally.
You know, my opinions can evolve.
No, absolutely. But like if you want a moment to feel like or like a monster to feel impervious to harm, and the characters do something in a round that would just completely
like stun it and steal its main weapon,
exactly,
or kill it in a single round.
Yeah, like, because they
like
just
Steven
like
did. Yeah.
Yeah, min max a crazy thing, and then you're like, no, but it's actually kind of important to me, the person who is also playing this game, that this this monster feels a certain way, I don't mind fudging that. Or it's like if you wanted to, you could have been like, you know, you, the stunning blow hits, the weapon comes like out of her hand. You look up into her eyes and you realize she cannot be stunned or whatever. Yeah, you know, like you could do something.
Yeah, you suddenly, you just come in suddenly and you're just like, actually, does it? Well, I think that's kind of the problem a little bit with 5e too, because you have to like kind of, like if you want to tell a specific story, you have to like craft everything a certain way. Yeah. Like it's like, okay, I took that
star. You have to really cheese the resistances and immunities.
Yeah, yeah. You have to like build them as they go or whatever. But anyway, like you're like, for instance, that monster that I sent out to you guys, there were so many things working against it. It's like there's like seven of you, mm-hmm. you know, it actually had kind of low hit points and like there weren't enough like guys around with it. Like the encounter balance was like wrong or whatever. And there were just so many powers that I couldn't account for. And it's kind of like, yeah, there's so much to account for in 5e that I think it makes it more, I don't know. Like I think it's like just so complex and stuff that it just makes it like, it feels like bogged down a little bit.
And especially in a game that requires that your story is either affected or resolved by violence, it does require you to put a lot of effort into how the monsters feel and stuff like that, which is just sometimes hard. Whereas in Monster of the Week, my favorite, you can just be like this monster leaps 30 feet backwards out of range of all of your swords. Like you can just do that. and that's a response to one of your attacks or something. And allows you to have a lot more narrative control over it. And in that way, it allows you, I think, to be a little bit more of an active participant in the collaboration rather than being restrained by all
the
rules.
The key tags is a lot better than a huge list of stats.
Like Izanami, right? Was the monster
Izanami,
like she didn't have a, you know, I resist stun, or like I can't be parted from my weapon, or like I can leap 30 feet backwards, like as like features or whatever. But if you have fewer descriptions for the monster and you have like a more streamlined game, like a Monster of the Week or like Cairn or some other type of OSR game or something, like it's just like, what makes sense? Like how powerful is this monster? Is like, and then, but then you also kind of like do it on the flip side, because the players can also do whatever they want. And so they're like, oh, I'm going to like use this like environmental thing in order, like I'm going to use like a chain to like grab this. And if you're like, yeah, that's great, I love that.
Yeah,
like,
good for you. And it's smart, you know?
it's so like, it gives you more narrative control than just, I push this button, I push that button, I push this button. I do action surge, I do this, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, it is actually more narrative to like just have fewer like little like things.
And
fighting, like for example, like when we fought Grimdark, like it's like, and he had like that second stage and stuff, and that was really cool. But it's like it wasn't like we were like in a narrative and we weren't like talking to him. It was like, no, we have to like fight him. Let's do the strat. Like let's do it, you know, that way. Like let's do tactics and stuff. And that's really fun. But it's sort of like, I think like when I've run, like for instance, when you guys like fought the Deathless One. You guys like fought like nine of them or whatever. And I was like trying to get story moments out of there, but a lot of it was like, okay, let's teleport up here, let's do this, and let's push these buttons.
To be fair, can be fun and what your character wants. Like I really enjoy technical battle. Like it's fun, you know? But I also think that if what you're trying to get out of it is a more collaborative storytelling fix rather than like a tabletop tactics kind of fix, then there's just different systems, you know?
And for that, I wanna bring up just magic use. Like in a standard 5e game, magic is so complicated. There's like 200 or some odd spells in the player's handbook plus the source books. But in and my favorite setting, Monster of the Week, there's this use magic and big magic, and it's like you can, if you have magical powers, you can do whatever you want, and it's sliding scale. And it's like you either succeed or you don't succeed. There's no like, I have to learn this particular spell and prepare it so I can do this thing, which I've grown to hate.
Yeah.
And it's so arbitrary, right? Like you level up and like suddenly like, where did you learn that? Where'd you get that?
Oh, you got a new wizard spell. Yeah, I just made it up.
Made it up. I wrote it. I wrote one. I wrote my own, which is cool, but we don't see you
I learned the spell that every other wizard knows, and I picked it up, collective unconsciousness.
Which is why I like BG3, because it's like, it does all of it for you. It's like 5e should have been a computer game all along.
almost.
But yeah, that all that to say, like, not to discount anybody else's, like, mode of fun. Totally, I love the tactical stuff that you can get into in 5e. It's so fun. But I think like there's other ways to get play a game.
Totally.
Basically.
Yeah. Just kind of tap back onto the story arc stuff is like,
oh, if right, you the want,
if you have an idea as a GM about a specific moment you want to try to pull out, I would suggest not to keep that a secret from the player that you are involving and being like, hey, does this feel right for your mm-hmm. character? And would you want to work with me on trying to get to like this moment? If you have a specific moment you want to bring out.
Yeah, it's totally legit.
Yeah, totally legit. And otherwise, I think that we all kind of agree, have timers of sort of like what's happening in the background. Let your players affect or not affect those timers in the way that they choose, and then just have a natural, like an idea of what natural consequences
are. Yeah, I guess like another way of saying this, like the best way to tell your story if you're writing a game is in the setting and the flavor and the atmosphere, not the actual events.
Like the, like the background of it can be very rich, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you want to tell a very specific, like you've built a certain level of sessions that you want to play in and you want to have people play through, there is no shame in sort of having like a railroady sort of like, this is your objective. It is very clear from the start. And you are trying to get like, you know, this page of a book and you're trying to bring that back to the big library you work for. Like that is fine. You can do that. Just don't rely on your characters to have to come up with all the right answers if that's what you want. Mm-hmm. Just like make it so that they have these big arrows pointing where they should go.
Right to play.
Just, yeah, yeah, exactly. And that is also another way you can do it. Mm-hmm. All right.
Is that the full scope of the question?
Yeah. So let me just check one more time. So they do say, is there any steadfast rules that they should follow to make sure the story comes out right? We kind of talked about not having a right and instead having the timers unless you want a very specific experience. And in that way, don't give them a lot of options. Just kind of bring them through what you have built. And then it's do you have any recommendations on structuring the story so it all makes sense? Again,
you can't in this type of medium.
Yeah, I think that
it's improv.
For me, it's just like have logical steps that are happening in those like timers that you have in the background so that it doesn't feel like we chased a goose for a day and now the sun is gone.
Yeah, I think having clear stakes as well is really important. I think that's probably a good measure as well. I think in making it clear that if you want it to be compelling and stuff, make it so that the characters can actually die.
Yeah, that's huge.
Like in 5e, that is basically impossible. It's impossible to die in 5e. That happened to me once, but it was level one.
We just did an event where it was like, all of your characters might die tonight, and then none of our characters.
Yeah.
Even.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not that Shade pulled any punches, but it was just kind of like
that. Like that that carriage monster attacked once, and then we stun locked it.
That's
and
true.
Like,
yeah.
We're just gonna beat the shit out.
Although you did get disintegrated, but it was in a dream.
Yeah. That is true.
And I think he only added that dream thing because.
You were
he didn't
dead.
Want you to.
A guy got killed really fast, and he was like, "Oh, it's a dream. It's not real." I was like,
oh. That's why he just set you up some glass cannons.
Honestly, that might be why Shade is in prison.
Oh,
because he pulled his punches. You know,
he pulled his punches.
Shit.
Pulled his punches. He should have punched more, and otherwise the cops wouldn't have gotten him if he punched more.
He should have disintegrated them. All right. So it turns out that brevity is not the soul of wit, as we have gone quite long. So we are going to do a second episode that's going to be released on Friday with the rest of these questions. We will see you all on Friday. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.